This is Connect a Nation, an award-winning podcast focused on all things broadband. From closing the digital divide to improving your internet speeds, we talk technology topics that impact all of us, our families, and our neighborhoods. On this episode of Connect a Nation, I have a special guest who has spent nearly a decade researching the digital divide and meeting many of those who are directly impacted by it. Find out what Dr. Christopher Ali is working on now and the claim he says many broadband leaders need to stop making or risk creating more harm. I'm Jessica Denson, and this is Connect a Nation. I'm at Mountain Connect Day 2, and I just watched this interesting panel, but one of my favorite people was on it, and I had to ask him to return to our podcast for another interview. I believe this is our third official one on the podcast, Dr. Christopher Ali, and in the background, there's applause, but go ahead and say hi.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's so awesome to have you around again and see your face.
Yeah.
First time we met, we just were talking about it. It was 2017 when you were doing research for your book, Farm Fresh.
Yes.
You'd come through Louisville, Kentucky and brought tuna.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
I'm pouring out some water for him. I love
a little
him.
A little bourbon.
Yeah, a little bourbon. And since then, you've done amazing things. How are things going, just in general? Let us know.
I mean, things are great, although I always feel that you need to separate how things are going personally with, like, the dumpster fire that is our current world. But, you know, so I've been at Penn State for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I was recruited from the University of Virginia in 2022, and I'm loving it there. The resources, the support, the students, my colleagues. Like, I think we're really building Penn State as the place to be if you want to seriously study broadband and mm-hmm. telecommunications as an undergrad, as a master's, as a PhD student. We are the place to be now, and it's really cool to be part of that.
That is very cool. And you really were doing research in the broadband space before it became cool, quote unquote, to do that research, because now, through after the pandemic with BEAD and everything, a lot of that, we got started to see a lot more data on that,
yeah.
Even more so than just what the FCC was putting out. But you were really leading that charge. Talk about why that was important to you.
Well, I part of it was that no one was talking about it, or at least a very select few, and it certainly hadn't moved, I think, outside of academia into more of the public spotlight. So mm-hmm. you might recall in 2019, I wrote a piece for the New York Times mm-hmm. About rural broadband and why, particularly for farmers, why broadband was so important for farming. You know, then the pandemic happens and suddenly everyone realizes, oh, holy smokes, this is not a luxury. This is a right. This is
right.
A necessity. This is utility. Like, mm-hmm. And you're not, you know, like, and what am I trying to say here? That everyone needed it. Right. Mm-hmm. Regardless of income, regardless of geographic location. So now definitely we're having a moment, right? We're having a broadband moment. But I've been reflecting on my time in this space. And I know that there's so many people who have been in this space so much longer than I have. So I'm not claiming some sort of like longevity. But it's been 8 years
mm-hmm.
that
it's
I've been fully engrossed in the broadband mm-hmm. world. And as I'm finishing writing a new book on broadband, and the last section of the conclusion is actually called An Ode to Tuna. And it's about what I've learned in the last 8 years and kind of comparing the research that I did for Farm Fresh Broadband with the research that I did mm-hmm. and looking at what hasn't changed, but what has. And the fact of the matter is the stories that I'm hearing are no different than the stories that I heard in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really heartbreaking. And, you know, and I've opened up the scope of my work, so it's not just rural. I'm spending some time in an indigenous community. I spent some time in inner city Pittsburgh, and I'm hearing the same stories, and that's really heartbreaking. Now, there's a tremendous more money available, mm-hmm. and there's more like public attention to this issue. But the fact of the matter is that it's 2025, and people still don't have access or affordability or the skill sets. I mean, there's so much more we need to do, and you know, I'm hoping to play a small part in that.
Yeah, no, our audience can't see us, but I'm nodding my head, agreeing with them. And just so everybody knows, Tuna, which we mentioned briefly, was your dog that you brought around.
Yeah.
Is a cute little, was he like a hound?
He was
dog?
A hound.
Yeah.
A cross-eyed hound.
He was very cute, very awesome. And he was definitely the ambassador of broadband.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. And like when we were doing, so we did what was called the Rural Broadband Road Trip in 2018. And that's when, I guess it was 2018 that we met.
Yeah.
And when I would contact these communities out on our road trip and say that I was coming, I would also mention Tuna. And he was definitely the star of the show. And like, I remember we were in a small town in Minnesota, and Tuna was on the front page of their newspaper.
I love it.
Yeah.
Tuna
yeah.
deserved so, all of that.
He absolutely did. He was a great traveling companion, a great research assistant. And so it's kind of nice in this new work to be reflecting on that road trip
Tuna.
That
I
we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I say literally we, and like, what did we learn?
Mm-hmm.
8 years ago, that can be applied to today.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've been at Connect Nation for 8 years. I had just started when we met, and just entering the broadband world as well. And I agree with you that the same stories we're still hearing of people in farming communities that want to stay but they can't because they need a job or they need access or, you know, a lot of the same stories, and it's a shame. Which brings me around and about to the point that that you made on the panel that. So we need to stop saying that the digital divide is going to be over in 5 years.
Yeah.
Because it's not reality.
No.
And it really causes issues where people will be like, oh, okay, it's going to be fixed just like that. But what do you mean about that? Do you mean that it's changing or that the target's moving? Or why did you say that and why do you define it?
Well, I think when we say something like, and when I say we, I'm generally referring to either an elected official or a broadband officer, right? Someone of power in the law policy sphere who might stand up in front of a crowd and say, we're going to solve the digital divide in 5 years, or the BEAD program is going to solve the digital divide. And what it does is it reduces the digital divide purely to a connectivity issue.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that it is so much more complex and so much more nuanced, right? Okay, I might have a fiber connection to my home, but I don't own a computer. I might have a fiber connection to my home, but it's $200 a month and I can't afford it. I might have a fixed wireless connection to my home, but I don't speak English. I might have it to my home, but I don't know how to use a computer, or I only knew how to use it for limited means, or I only have a phone. Like, the digital divide intersects so much more with other facets of discrimination and marginalization in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not a technological. It's not a technological issue, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's an issue of power. And so when I hear someone say we're going to solve this issue, it's like saying we're going to solve poverty in 5 years.
No, right.
That would be amazing. But like, we need to set realistic goals, because what I worry about, particularly with state broadband offices, is a lot of them have sunsets.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are going to sunset in 2030 because they assume the job is done. In my mind, to be perfectly honest, the job only ramps up once everybody is connected.
That there's the next step.
That's the next step. And like, we have to think about these things simultaneously. And I know someone on our panel said, no, first comes connection, then comes everything else. And I respectfully disagree with that. We have to think about, you know, infrastructure, affordability, devices, support, education, simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
In order to really address the kind of multifaceted nature of the digital divide. And that's kind of why I'm, I guess, you know, dying on this hill of saying we need to stop saying that we'll end the digital divide.
I'll tell you that in conversations with my CEO, Tom Free, who you also met, in that same thing with Tuna, is that, you know, how do we even define it anymore? Because now you have new technology.
Absolutely.
And so, again, that moves away from people, widens the gap.
AI right. has created a new digital divide, right,
mm-hmm.
between those who can harness it, those who know how to do the prompts, and those who know how to use it for multifaceted parts of their life, versus those like me who have no idea how to use it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a new digital divide, right? There's always going to be a new digital divide, because like, this is how capitalism works. New technologies get rolled out to wealthier areas, to folks who can afford it, usually to urban areas,
mm-hmm.
and then it will distill. That in and of itself is a digital divide. So
yeah, one thing that ruffled my feathers when I was listening to the panel was the gentleman who was you moved out to the rural area, so why do you deserve it? I wanted to throw something.
Oh, my earrings were coming off.
Oh yeah, just the whole time I've been at Connected Nation, it's been about like bringing everybody along, leaving no one behind, no matter where they are. So to hear that was just like, what? What was your reaction internally? I saw you kind of. I'm going to keep it together here, but I disagree. You're using the BS side.
I've heard this a lot throughout my career researching rural broadband, and I've heard it as someone who have spent a lot of time in rural communities, spending a lot of time listening to people, that, oh, if you want something better, just move, or it's your fault that you don't have great connection, that you have to pay more because you've either chosen or your life circumstances has you finds yourself in a rural area or a remote area. It is... what's the right word? It's pejorative. It's patronizing to say that. Like, I'm going to wag my finger at you and say, well, you deserve less than everybody else because you've made these choices or circumstances beyond your control have kept you in a rural area. You can say the same thing about Indigenous peoples, right? About reservations. And for this new book, I've spent some time there too. So it boils my potatoes to no end.
Boils because, my potatoes? Yeah, I love that. Okay.
Because why? Yeah. Why do rural folks get subpar broadband just because they're in rural America?
Yeah, and I would also take that argument even further, whereas we have $42.5 billion available that are going to help make those business models at least viable.
Exactly.
So I don't quite understand how you can argue against that if you want to take part of that BEAD money.
Right, because so much of this is, you know, we know that high-speed, affordable broadband, when adopted in rural communities, can be a game-changer for economic development.
Right.
Can be a game-changer for unemployment. Can be a game-changer for education. Telehealth. We don't have enough doctors and nurses and healthcare centers in rural areas. It gives young people more options. It allows urban folks to move into rural areas and contribute to the economy thereof. So why wouldn't we want to give them, in fact, the best broadband?
And isn't that part of, even just the fabric of America, the Americana idea of rural, the rural U.S., the small town America, the farmers of America that have fed the world, and the idea of that. But even that, rural America represents millions and millions and millions of people.
Absolutely does. It also represents 92% of the geography of this country, right? I mean, and millions of people thereof who don't necessarily want to move to a city or don't want to move at all.
Right.
In sociology, they call this the rural penalty, the price you pay, the kind of literal or figurative price you pay for living in an area. But we need to stop thinking that just because you're in a rural area, you deserve something less.
I agree.
Less than.
I could say resoundingly everybody at Connected Nation would agree with that statement.
Yeah.
Yes. Because, I mean, and we also want the same for urban areas that are low income or have yet to have
those connections. Absolutely. And this is going back to this kind of multifaceted nature of the digital divide. I want the same opportunities for newcomers, for Indigenous peoples, for folks who have been impacted by the justice system, right? Mm-hmm. We need to get over, and this is, you know, one of the things I didn't get to say on our panel is, we really need to stop thinking about broadband as a commodity. It is not a commodity. It is a window to the world. It's a window to opportunity, right?
Yeah.
By continually thinking about it as a commodity, by continually thinking about people as customers and consumers, it allows us to make market-based decisions because calling someone a consumer dehumanizes them, right? Calling them a person, calling them by their name, calling them Jess, right? I want to do something to help Jess, but I don't need to do something to help consumers, right?
Right.
There's a different way that we can that we should be reframing the language that we're using when we're talking about broadband, because it is so much more than just a toaster.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I promised you that I would not keep you for too long because I know you have an appointment at another meeting, and I've had you for 13 minutes. So tell us when your new book's coming out or when your plan is and what's up next for you.
I am hoping that it would be out late 26, early 27.
Okay.
That's the goal. It's almost done. I've just got one more chapter left to write. The book, the title is If These Maps Could Talk, Tales from the Digital Divide.
Oh, great.
And it's
great
a book
title.
About stories. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And it's about how stories and how people can influence public policy rather than just companies. And what's next? I'm working on a project right now actually involving first responders. So thanks to a grant from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, I'm spending time and doing focus groups in 10 rural Pennsylvania counties, talking to first responders, law enforcement, firefighters, and EMS officers to look at how the lack of broadband infrastructure is impacting their work.
Because I bet that's going to be interesting.
It's been fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I find that public safety is something we often don't talk about when it comes to connectivity. Talk about education and telehealth and workforce development, but not public safety. So this is kind of an opportunity to
Are you looking at some of what FirstNet's doing with all
looking
that
at,
too?
Looking at FirstNet, looking at the move to NextGen 911, but all from the side of first responders. So listening, again, spending time there listening in focus groups. Mm-hmm. And then once that project's done, I have promised myself and my husband, I am taking a year off major projects.
Yeah.
You know, because when the book is even to the publisher, there's a lot of copy editing that has to do. Then there's promotion of the book. So I kind of just want to, I want to focus on my students. I want to take a breath. I want to focus on getting that book out. And then we'll see. We'll see what the next research project is.
Well, when the research comes out and the book comes out, you give me a call and let's talk about you're doing. And your new doggy is Loki.
Loki. Yep.
And your new hubby. Now, Ben. You guys are still kind of newlyweds, right?
4 years.
Four years. Time has flown by.
Yeah, been together for 7 years, 4 years married.
Well, you and Ben are cute.
Thank you.
So congratulations to both of you. And have a good meeting.
Thank you so
much. I mean, I don't know who you're going to talk to. That's more important than me, but that's all right.
No one here. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Wonderful to have you. Dr. Christopher Ali, who's with Penn State and does great stuff. Pick up his book, Farm Fresh.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
And that concludes our coverage from Mountain Connect 2025 in Denver, Colorado. Until next time, I'm Jessica Denson, and this is Connected Nation. If you'd like to know more about our organization, head to connectednation.org or find all our latest episodes on your favorite podcast platforms.